in the matter of Schwartz versus Maness. May we please have appearances of counsel?
Good afternoon, Your Honors. Bruce Greenberg from Light De Palma, Greenberg and Afanador in Newark on behalf of the plaintiffs, the petitioners in this court.
Giovanni DiPiero from DiPiero Ratting, Bloomfield, New Jersey, and here on behalf of plaintiff appellant Larry Schwartz and the NJ322 LLC.
And may it please the court, Jack Slim from Marshall Dennehy on behalf of the defendant respondents Nick Maness and Cooper Levinson.
Good afternoon. Trevor Cooney from Markstrom Griner on behalf of defendants Pulte Holmes and Eric Ford.
Welcome, counsel. Mr. Greenberg, please go ahead.
Do we have another counsel here?
May it please the court, Trevor Shanklin on behalf of Cooper Levinson and Nicholas Maness in the Adelaide Township.
Yes, I have three advocates, Mr. Greenberg, Mr. Slim, Mr. Cooney. Okay.
Thank you, Chief Justice Ravner, and may it please the court. With the court's permission, I'd like to reserve up to 3 minutes for rebuttal if necessary.
That's fine.
Lost profits, like all forms of damages, are satisfactorily proven when established to a reasonable degree of certainty. The amount of those damages need not be proven with precision, and if there's doubt, that uncertainty is to be laid at the feet of the wrongdoer who altered the proper course of events, instead of at the door of the injured party. In 1936, however, the Court of Errors and Appeals carved out an exception to those principles in the Weiss case. That exception, known as the New Business Rule, holds that a new business cannot even attempt to prove lost profits because doing so would be too speculative. In 1936, accountants hand wrote on ledger pages, and there were none of the advanced accounting and forecasting techniques that we have now. In 2022, damage experts can use sophisticated economic and financial data, market surveys and analyses, business records of similar enterprises, and advanced principles of financial forecasting to establish loss of potential profits with reasonable certainty. What I just said is almost verbatim from the Restatement Second of Contracts, which expressly repudiates the new business rule. The appellate division in the RSB case, and before that in the PM Video case, persuasively suggested that the NBR, the new business rule, should be abrogated in light of the more sophisticated methods now available. Most other jurisdictions have discarded the new business rule, as our briefs have shown. This court should now declare that New Jersey no longer follows the new business rule. In doing so, the court would merely be recognizing what the Third Circuit saw in the early 1990s in the Merritt Logan and Lightning Lube cases, which was that the new business rule even then no longer represented New Jersey law. The court would also be adopting the appellate division's persuasive view in PM Video and RSB, and what the restatement and other scholarly analyses say is the proper rule. This court nearly got to that point in the Perini case, with three justices agreeing that the new business rule should not apply. No justice disagreed in that case, as the others didn't reach the issue. The new business rule has been a dead man walking for years. Today is the time for the court to bury it. If the court does that, there's no basis to preclude the expert reports of Dr. Robert Powell in these two cases, and the decision to bar him, and the ultimate decision granting summary judgment to the defendants because the plaintiffs had no damage expert, should be reversed. In their successful motion to bar Dr. Powell, the defendants conceded that they were not arguing net opinion, lack of credentials, or any issues of methodology under evidence rules 702 or 703. Instead, as the law division judge astutely drew out from them, they said that their only basis for barring Dr. Powell was that the new business rule applied and that a new business can never seek lost profits. Indeed, earlier in the Duncan Farms case, the earlier of the two cases that the court has before it today, the defendants had attacked Dr. Powell's credentials and had moved to bar his report as a net opinion. But the judge who handled most of this case, a different judge from the one who made the ultimate decisions, rejected both those arguments in his written opinion. As that judge rightly said, Dr. Powell's reports were based on sound facts and objective factors. That was true of his report in the companion Egg Harbor case as well. Dr. Powell's report and the plaintiff's case should go to a jury in each of these appeals. That concludes my preliminary statement.
Mr. Greenberg, you're essentially asking us to adopt the restatement and the reasonable certainty standard that it applies, correct?
That's correct, Chief Justice.
So as you've pointed out, the trial judge here relied on the new business rule. If we accept your argument and adopt the restatement, should this matter go back to the trial court to assess under the new standard?
No, because the defendants acknowledged that they had no basis to challenge and were not challenging Dr. Powell's report under any of the normal criteria of Evidence Rule 702 or 703 or the reasonable certainty standard. The trial judge asked, the law division judge asked what the basis was, and the defendants said that their sole basis was the existence of the new business rule. Against that backdrop and the backdrop of the prior ruling on the defendant's motion to bar Dr. Powell because his was a net opinion and their argument that he lacked any credentials, the defendants had shot all the bullets that they were able to shoot.
Well maybe not. Maybe they thought this is the silver bullet and I'll just pull the trigger once. And if I pull the trigger once and it hits the target, I don't have to pull the trigger twice. So what would be the problem, as suggested by the Chief Justice, that if we were to agree with your argument that it's time to cover the dirt over the new business rule, it not go back to determine whether or not the report and the arguments are still too speculative? But you would agree if the opinion is too speculative and doesn't meet the reasonable degree of certainty standard, it's not going to stand the test, right?
Yes, and in fact, the defendants argued that the report was speculative. Their argument was that because Dr. Powell evaluated multiple scenarios in his report, that the damages were too remote and speculative because we didn't know which scenario would apply and that somehow it was wrong of him to have done that. In fact, as the record shows, this is a tortious interference case in which, to summarize, a very complicated chain of real estate contracts and assignments and other machinations that occurred. The plaintiffs are alleging and produced evidence to show that the defendants deprived the plaintiffs of two possible economic advantages. One was the development of a mixed-use project with 100 units plus commercial retail. And the second project, after the defendants changed the game, was an affordable housing, low and moderate income affordable housing development. Each of those projects was a prospective economic advantage that the plaintiffs had, of which the defendants, we say, wrongly deprived them. As a result, Dr. Powell used both of those scenarios in his report in Duncan Farms case to evaluate the alternative one, the mixed-use development, and the alternative two, the low and moderate income housing development. That was not speculation. That was closely tied to the facts alleged and the evidence presented in terms of the deprivation of prospective economic advantage. So Justice Albin,
that argument's really not shot. That not before the court, though, is it? Right now, we're talking about whether the new business rule is still the law of New Jersey, and there are arguments. They certainly have not waived arguments with respect to whether or not the expert testimony was speculative.
Justice Patterson, as I've indicated, they made the argument that the report was speculative. And the courts below, as a tail on the main dog of the new business rule issue, agreed with them.
Do you agree with the comment B, comment in the restatement? However, if the business is a new one or if it is a speculative one that is subject to great fluctuations in volume, costs, or prices, proof will be more difficult.
That's the same comment, Justice Patterson, that I read from in my preliminary statement.
Right.
That's absolutely
right.
True. We have the burden that we have because we don't have the same track record that Kay Hovnanian has or some of the major developers that we've all seen. So there are...
That seems to be consistent with the arguments that they made before, but if that were the standard adopted, why shouldn't they have the opportunity to develop that argument and to attack your experts' reports in the same way in a remand?
Well, they have had that opportunity. This is a 2011 case. Duncan Farms case is a 2011 case. The Egg Harbor case followed it by a short period of time. The defendants have had ample opportunity to attack Dr. Powell, and they have attacked him in every conceivable way and in some inconceivable ways.
But the
results have been what they've been. They succeeded in their final attack. They failed in all the other attacks that they had. The final attack even included an argument, as I've indicated, that his report was too speculative. His report, his analysis, in both cases, the reports are in evidence. There's a competing report in the Duncan Farms case that begins on page 201 of the Duncan Farms appendix that purports to pick apart Dr. Powell's report at a granular level. What that report did was simply to show that, at best for the defendants, this is a battle of the experts that belongs in front of a jury.
But even if the arguments have been advanced by your adversaries, the trial judge made a ruling premised on the new business rule, no?
Primarily, yes.
So shouldn't the trial judge be the one to assess this? And it may be an easy walk for you if it is as you've just described. Shouldn't that be the appropriate forum if you prevail on the important threshold question to send it back to apply at the trial court level?
We think that this court has what it needs to address that component of both decisions below that asserted that Dr. Powell's report was too speculative to satisfy even the reasonable certainty standard. That was raised by the defendants. Both courts below asserted that. That was admittedly not the primary focus of their decision or of the reason that we're here today, but it was presented by the defendants. It was ruled on by both courts below. The record is complete.
So are you saying that there was a new business rule decision, and then there was a second decision that said that that under a standard similar to the restatement, that your experts' opinions were unduly speculative?
It was not. It was not put, Justice Patterson, in exactly that way. There was not a reference to the reasonable certainty standard. But your honors have seen and will see that what the law division did was, after analyzing the new business rule and analyzing the facts as to the plaintiff's history and whether they were or were not a new business and concluding that they were a new business, the law division judge went on to say, and additionally, Dr. Powell's report is speculative because the damages are too remote. He used multiple scenarios. That was wrong. And she tacked that on. Admittedly, from my perspective, that was not the primary basis for her decision. But she did so rule.
And is that under appeal here? You focused your argument saying the new business rule is antiquated, doesn't take into account modern accounting and the experts' methodologies and so forth. There should not be this cutoff of new business can't get there, but you're promoting the restatement. Is there a trial court opinion here that is not reliant on the new business rule? And if so, is that being challenged?
There is only the language that the law division used that I summarized for your honor and that the appellate division also adverted to. That was not the primary focus of either opinion. But they did say it. It was raised by the defendants. And our view is that the court has the ability to say today, we are going to discard the new business rule. We are going to apply the reasonable certainty test. And because the record contains Dr. Powell's report, the opposing report, all kinds of colloquy, and this is a 2011 case, we have the ability to say from what we can already see that summary judgment should be reversed and Dr. Powell should be admitted to testify.
Is that part of your cert petition? That's what I'm wondering about. I thought your cert petition was focused entirely on let's get rid of the new business rule.
It is.
So how could this court, on a grant of your cert petition, which asked only for us to jettison the new business rule, make a determination on whether under a quasi-restatement standard, these experts' reports fail or they don't fail?
We think, Justice Patterson, that the record supports that, but if the court decides that it is merely going to reverse or overrule the new business rule and wishes to send it back to the law division to evaluate Dr. Powell's report under the appropriate standard, that's what the court will do.
Mr. Greenberg, I don't know if you're a baseball fan, but I'll use an analogy because it's the start of the season. It sounds like you're trying to stretch a triple into a home run, and a triple's pretty good if you can actually achieve it.
Well, certainly a triple is better than a strikeout. And so obviously we'll be guided, as we must, by what the court decides.
Questions? Anything else you'd like to add?
That's all I have at this time. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Slim.
May it please the court. Let me start by saying, if I could have one moment, that what Judge Lucas did and what the appellate division did was totally consistent with Bell Atlantic.
I'm sorry, would you speak up a bit?
It was totally consistent with Bell Atlantic against PM. Because in both cases, the trial courts assumed or were concerned that the Supreme Court would reverse the new business rule. So they took the next step and found that the proofs were not there through the expert report that there was proof of lost profits by a certainty. Both the appellate division did that in our case, and the appellate division did that in Bell Atlantic. So they both affirmed the trial court's decisions, which threw out the expert reports because they were speculative and because they didn't prove the damages by certainty.
And am I right that the challenge before this court is limited to the new business rule?
That's all we have today. We have nothing more than that today. That's the challenge. That was the petition that we responded to.
So that's what you should be addressing, because you're starting out your argument trying to kill the plaintiff's case. Why don't we start out with whether or not the new business rule in this age has any remaining vitality?
We believe, Your Honor, it does for the following reasons. Number one, tax returns are tax returns. P&Ls are P&Ls. That hasn't changed since 1936. Creative accounting can become junk. So our point is that our Court of Errors and Appeals recognized at that time that there's a difference, there's a distinction when you have a claim for lost profits by a new business with no track record, as opposed to a claim for loss for profits made by an existing enterprise, which has the background, which has the track record, on which an estimate could be made.
Of course. So the restatements and the cases all recognize that. If you're an existing business, you got a track record, and your way may be easy in terms of proving your case. It's not going to be easy if you're a new business. But that doesn't mean you should be excluded, that you may be able to bring in expert testimony, modern accounting practices, witnesses about how you're going to put it all together, and you may be able to overcome the fact that it is a novice, a neophyte in the area. Why shouldn't that be the better practice? It may not be easy, but it's not necessarily impossible.
Here, Your Honor, the trial court in our case relied on the MBR. The appellate division in our case relied on the MBR. The defense relied on the MBR to defend this case. And so what happened is we're here on a petition, as Justice Patterson said, limited petition on the viability of our MBR in today's climate. And our point is that if this court were to tweak the rule, if the court were to take the position that the rule is no longer viable, we still cannot be in a position where a claim for lost profits on behalf of a new company is treated the same way as a claim for lost profits is on behalf of an existing enterprise.
No one's saying it would be treated the same way. There would be a different standard. It would be a much more difficult hurdle to vault. No question about it. But it still would be permissible. Heightened standard. But trial court would have to determine whether or not the proofs were sufficient to allow the case to go before a jury. What's wrong with that?
There's nothing wrong with it. I took a look at what New York does in like situations in preparation for today, knowing the question would come up. And so New York has this heightened degree of scrutiny when it comes to a claim for lost profits by a new business. And that makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? So it's a heightened degree of scrutiny, and it is proofs that aren't speculative through certainty. So they've got this extra scrutiny on top of the fact that you've got a requirement for certainty.
So tell us what's wrong, if anything, with the restatement's comment. Damages can be established with reasonable certainty with the aid of expert testimony, economic and financial data, market surveys and analysis, business records of similar enterprises, and the like.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that as a statement. As a general statement, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just under these circumstances, I think that the Court of Errors and Appeals did get it right at the time in question when they said that these are speculative damages and too remote.
But for today's purposes, where we are, what's wrong with the reasonable certainty standard that other jurisdictions and the restatement have advanced?
From our standpoint, Your Honor, there's nothing wrong with the standard. But as I said before, I do believe that a wholesale abolishment of the rule would be going too far. I do believe that under these circumstances, we need more than simple certainty. We need a higher degree of certainty. And we also need a scrutiny because trial judges are going to be in a situation where every time someone forms an LLC to make widgets and the machine doesn't work or it's defective, the complaint also contains a claim for what? Lost profits. And they're going to be bombarded with those cases. And so trial courts and the defense are going to need to be in a position where these cases could be defended. The right way to defend them would be, A, the new business rule. But if the court abolishes the new business rule, then I would say, under those circumstances, you can use the restatement. But I think you need to go further and follow the New York rule under the circumstances where there is greater scrutiny applied by the trial judge to these claims on behalf of these new fledgling businesses.
I can see greater scrutiny, but it's difficult for me to imagine that we would use a different standard. Reasonable degree of certainty has to apply to all businesses. I can understand a more heightened scrutiny for a new business that doesn't have a track record.
Right.
That's what you're talking about.
Exactly. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
And so if we had that, and the defense had a right to challenge that, depending on the opinions that are rendered, and the trial judge is then making a decision, the trial judge would be armed with an opinion which would enable the trial judge to do just that. So that's why we say that a wholesale abolishment of the rule starting from scratch wouldn't be fair under the circumstances. And so that's our argument in this particular case, limited to the petition as before the court.
Questions, anyone?
Do you have a citation? You mentioned a New York standard.
Yes.
Just want to make sure I understand.
Yes, and Your Honor, the New York standard is followed both in the appellate division in New York as well as in the Second Circuit.
Okay.
And those cases are all set forth.
There's the International Telepassport Corporation case in the Second Circuit?
Yes, we have that. And Anderson versus City of Bessemer, as well as Schoenfeld versus Hilliard. And they're all put together in Holland versus...
That's in your brief.
FLS. That one isn't, but it puts them all together. And that's at 769 Fed Appendix 40, 2019 U.S. App Lexis. 13435 and 2019 Westlaw.
Well, I'm not quick enough for this. 2019 U.S. Lexis.
2019 U.S. App Lexis.
Okay.
Yeah, 13435 and 2019 Westlaw, 1976096. And the good thing about that case is it talks about all the other cases, state and federal, that New York follows. All right. Thank you.
Mr. Cooney.
Good afternoon, and may it please the court. I've listened intently to the arguments both for and against maintaining the new business rule as a per se rule of exclusion, and we certainly join in the arguments advanced by Mr. Slim in favor of maintaining it as such. But I want to take off on some of the questions from the court so far. In our view, this isn't the appropriate case to revisit the NBR precisely because the trial court and the appellate division found that, even in the alternative, put aside the NBR for a moment, this plaintiff, these proofs, can't even meet the lowest potential threshold of proof, meaning reasonable certainty. I think we can all agree that, at worst, reasonable certainty is the lowest standard that could be adopted by this court were it inclined to set aside the NBR. But this court went out of its way to say, and by the way, the appellate division in Bell Atlantic and the McDonald versus City of Wildwood case and in Seaman before it, they all took the same approach when visiting the NBR. Certainly, Bell Atlantic went out of its way to say, first, the NBR is still good law, but it didn't stop there. It said, it continued on and said the proofs at that level couldn't even meet the reasonable certainty standard. McDonald did the same. McDonald, we quibble with plaintiff's counsel with respect to whether the appellate division found in that decision whether the NBR was good law or not, but it also continued on and said, counsel? Yes, Your Honor.
We've taken this case to decide an issue that there was a petition for certification.
Very good.
Raised an issue, didn't it? So I think we're here to decide that issue. What is your point on it?
Well, my point is that even regardless of how the court decides that issue, if it is inclined to set aside the NBR, there is another basis for affirming the appellate division. And that's what I think early on the question.
Where are we procedurally on that? Because that's what I'm wondering, and the reason I asked questions up front when Mr. Greenberg was speaking, is we have essentially alternative A and alternative B determination by the trial court. We have an affirmance essentially on both grounds by the appellate division. I think right. That's fair to say. We're here on alternative A. Is your position that alternative B, as a basis for throwing the case out, is still alive and well in the trial court and hasn't been appealed?
That's correct. It's still alive in the sense that there was no abuse of discretion. The appellate court found there was no abuse of discretion at the trial court level in finding it couldn't meet the reasonable certainty standard, Dr. Powell's report. So I do think that the opportunity presents itself for the court to make whatever decision it wants to make on the new business rule. If it chooses to set it aside, certainly it has the alternative to say, okay, reasonable certainty plus reasonable certainty, whatever the standard is that the court adopts. But we've already have a finding by the trial court and the appellate division that even that lowest threshold couldn't met or wasn't met in this case.
Is there some daylight between what the standard applied by the trial court and the standard applied by the restatement? See what I mean on the speculation issue?
So the restatement, as I understand, it adopts, for lack of a better word, the reasonable certainty standard, recognizing that proofs are going to be harder because it is a new business. Our position is that is not the appropriate standard. Nothing less than the new business rule is an appropriate standard because they, regardless of the improvements in accounting methodologies or forecasting models and the like, it still doesn't address the core problem that the NBR solved, is that in every instance when you have a new business, you have no track record. It has to be based on speculation and proving lost profits. You can dress it up in a prettier box and call it a new and improved methodology, but that methodology as its core has to have speculation based on, because it doesn't have the track record, right? We're still speaking to speculation. And I think that opens up a concern with verdicts that are not supported by the record. I understand there still could be another standard there, but it's too fraught with the ability to slip one by the goalie, to use a sports analogy, right? And then you're essentially finding a plaintiff can recover for lost profits even if they can't prove the fact of damage and the amount of damage. And by the way, I think that's an important issue to be addressed here, is you have to establish both the fact of damage and the quantum of damage. there's some discussions about, you know, who's the wrongdoer, you should blame the wrongdoer if you have to choose between the two. But you never get to that issue if the fact of damage can't be proven with reasonable certainty as well. And that's what we have here.
Share your colleague's position with respect to the New York test.
Certainly, if it's going to be an alternative, I think regardless of what the other states have called the alternative test, reasonable certainty plus some different terminology for the same concept, they all recognize that the newness of the venture, the newness of the enterprise, is a significant factor. So, if your question to me is that a better alternative? No, but if you're going to proceed and move past the NBR, there has to be a heightened standard. Because, again, the restatement, the UCC, they all recognize the inherent difficulty that a new business will face in establishing its lost profit damages with reasonable certainty. And I also think it's important to remind the court, not that it needs reminding, that the new business rule only deals with one aspect of potentially recoverable damages for a plaintiff. Or a new business, right? You can get you can recover the expenses that you had.
It's lost profits, so it's only.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And look, here it's not an issue because the plaintiffs in this case managed to flip the property to MBI and made a couple $100,000 on it. So they've recovered their expenses. I believe there's expert reports on the malpractice piece that raised the potential of disgorgement of fees and the like. So in this context, the NBR is just dealing with a sliver. In the context of it.
In your case, that's the big ticket item.
Yeah. Well, so only
it's not one of a number of different. Their big numbers in their experts' reports were based on lost profit.
Well, big numbers only because they didn't have the other categories of damages precisely because they sold the business. So would that have been a big number, a big ticket item? Probably, right? But we never had to address it because they flipped it here. I don't want to go down the road of Dr. Powell's report, but I will say I think the appellate division just scratched the surface of the reasons why Dr. Powell's report couldn't meet the reasonable certainty standard and was highly speculative.
The majority approach follows the reasonable certainty standard as to lost profits. How many go the extra step? For reasonable certainty plus or some variant of that sort.
In other states, you mean?
Other jurisdictions, yeah.
I certainly haven't done a survey of all the other cases, but I will say I think it's not coincidental that in the three cases that the appellate division has reviewed it in prior occasions, they all took the extra step and found that the new business couldn't meet that standard. I think that's the best evidence for the continued utility of the new business rule is that it works as a bright line rule. It avoids potential verdicts that are not supported by the evidence.
But it may prove too much. And look, you still may be in a very good position because a new business, as you said, doesn't have a track record. Right. And therefore, it's going to have to come up with the types of proofs that are going to meet the reasonable degree of certainty standard.
Right.
That's not going to be easy. I don't think anyone's suggesting that will be easy, but there may be cases where it can be done, and if that's so, why shouldn't the plaintiff be permitted to proceed?
Yeah, it can be done, but how can it be done? Because, like I said, regardless of whether you get an economic report, a damages expert, all these things are the one thing they lack, which is the critical component in all these cases, is a track record to establish their opinions. I mean, they're inherently faulty for that reason. And so, like I said, it's dressing up speculation in a prettier box. But
so you have a plaintiff over here who you're claiming ran a dry cleaning business, did some redevelopment. He wasn't going to be able to pull this off. But maybe some like Elon Musk coming in, okay? He might be.
Timely example of Justice Alvin.
He might be different, wouldn't you say? He could pull off a redevelopment project, even as a new business. No?
Maybe not. Possibility, not probably. Well,
so I agree with you. Maybe not. But if he can do it, why shouldn't he have a chance to prove it to the court?
Because land redevelopment and development is inherently a highly risky endeavor to begin with. But just because someone else has done it doesn't mean this particular person with a particular skill set is able to
agree,
do so.
Agreed. But the question, the only question is whether or not he should have this opportunity to bring his proofs to the court.
Well, I guess looking at it from a big picture perspective, is it worth setting aside a rule that has done an excellent job from a bright line fashion of parsing out cases in the case of new businesses that can't meet their burden for the one outlier, right? Because even if you have the one outlier that might be able to prove his case, you may have 100 cases that are get by improperly, get to the jury, and award a damages claim against the defendant.
We're not talking about right here sending the case to a jury. We're talking about a remand for the court to consider summary judgment. And we have a number of cases under something short of the new business bright line rule that grant summary judgment because there's insufficient, because the expert's report is so speculative that it can't support the claim.
So certainly. So there are obviously.
I don't think there's any suggestion here of a jury making the determination as to whether there's a sufficient expert report to support the plaintiff's claim.
Yeah, well, certainly in I believe it was the Seaman case, right? The court essentially took it away from the jury, issued an award, and the judge said, or the appellate division said, it's too speculative to be even allowed to get to the jury. But
it's the court that makes a determination if there's a motion to strike an expert report on whether or not a standard, either a standard of reasonable certainty or reasonable certainty plus, under that standard, is that sufficient to go to the jury? That's a summary judgment determination, right?
Potentially, or certainly an evidence determination if it's if there's more damages than lost profits. But I don't think it's. Look, one of the values of the NBR is certainly the judicial efficiency in all of it, right? I mean, there's going to open up this potential for a flood of cases.
Bright line rules are more efficient.
Agreed.
The question is, are they necessarily fair?
And that's where I was trying to get before when you look at fairness of the Elon Musks of the world may be able to, in a special exceptional case, meet that reasonable certainty standard. But I think there's going to be too many possibilities or the potential for harming a defendant who, when there's not even the proof of a new business being successful, so the fact of damage can't be established. But now you're opening up that door, and I believe it was the Seaman Court who said that, in effect, you're now rendering exemplary or punitive damages against the defendant when you haven't even established your fact of damage to begin with. And I know there's a gatekeeper function that can be employed at the trial court level, but we're talking about judicial efficiencies and overall fairness.
Well, you're saying that, and I think your colleague is saying that the trial court already acted as a gatekeeper on both grounds and rejected the expert's report on both grounds. So it's not just out there as a court might act as a gatekeeper. You're saying that this was already put before the court.
It was a net opinion argument advanced by the meanest defendants. But I don't think it didn't preclude, I think, Justice Patterson, you alluded to this on questioning to plaintiff's counsel, Mr. Greenberg, that no one at that judge, the prior trial court judge, never addressed whether the report could meet the reasonable certainty standard. And so that was still an open question that the trial court and the appellate division were allowed to entertain in the alternative, as appellate divisions have done before. And had no problem reaching that conclusion. Certainly, the appellate division found that the trial court didn't abuse its discretion in reaching that alternate conclusion. And so I think this court should, you know, again, uphold the NBR, but if you choose not to, there's no reason to send this back on remand for assessing the very decision that the trial court and appellate division already found in that respect.
Thank you, Mr. Cooney.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Greenberg, Bob.
Thank you, Chief Justice. I'll be very brief because nothing that you heard counters the rightness of abrogating the new business rule. I want to respond to a question that Justice Patterson asked one of the defense counsel about whether there is daylight in the decisions below, daylight between the decisions below and the standard that they use to find speculativeness and the restatement test or the reasonable degree of certainty test. Your honors have seen or will see that in the transcript of October 12, 2018, which is reproduced, I think, in full, beginning on page 8 of the opposition brief of the Minas defendants in this court, there was no reference to the reasonable certainty test there. The law division simply characterized Dr. Powell's report as speculative because it referred to more than one scenario, and for the reasons I already outlined, that was exactly what Dr. Powell should have been doing in terms of the facts of the case. Lastly,
Mr. Greenberg, is it appropriate for court to reject an expert's report under the reasonable certainty test, taking into account the newness of the business and all of the ramifications of that in terms of speculation, and then to ultimately grant summary judgment on a case?
It would be appropriate.
I know not your case. I'm not saying that, but this is a.
It would be appropriate only if the proofs did not rise to the level of a reasonable degree of certainty. The idea that there should be some sort of penalty or additional burden on a new business to go beyond the reasonable degree of certainty test is completely unsupported by New Jersey law, unsupported by the restatement, unsupported by the law of any jurisdiction that I know of. I haven't read the New York cases that counsel cited for a higher standard. But in our view, the inquiry should be the same for every claimant for lost profits. The entire universe of accounting techniques and other techniques should be evaluated. Newness of business may be one. It's probably harder in many cases for a new business to show lost profits. But it shouldn't be judged on a different standard than any other claimant for lost profits, and that's what everyone else has said. Lastly, I just want
to... I'm asking really a procedural question. It can be a decision that the court can make and never gets to the jury.
If the court finds, as in any damages case, that the plaintiff hasn't proven its claim with a reasonable degree of certainty, yes, Justice Patterson, the court can make that decision pre-trial. As I've indicated, the record already shows that that's not the case. But if there's a remand and the issue is revisited in front of the law division under the proper standard, we think the result will be the same.
Has there been a ruling to that? It's a little bit vague as to what happened in the trial court.
There has been a ruling, and this is my last point. I just wanted to complete the record on this because I was not complete earlier. There was an earlier ruling by Judge Weiss on August 21st, 2018. This is the particular page is page 238 of our appendix, Appellate Division appendix, where there was a previous motion, and I'm just going to read little bits from this page, although I know that reading from documents is not favored, especially at 3:45 in the afternoon. The Minas defendants also contend that the plaintiff's expert report on damages, that's Dr. Powell, constitutes a net opinion on the basis that the damages are too remote, contingent, and speculative to meet the legal standard of reasonable certainty. Then I'm going to skip a couple of sentences, so three dots, and the opinion picks up and says, loss of profits were based on sound fact and not on mere opinion evidence without factual support is recognized as a proper measure of damages if capable of being estimated with a reasonable degree of certainty. In the instant matter, the court is satisfied that Mr. Powell uses sound fact when compiling his report, as such calculations take into account the various changes in development, e.g. affordable housing and age-restricted requirements, along with objective factors, e.g. estimates of cost, capital structures, sales price, and rental rates.
Judge Lucas went in a different direction.
She did, but she did not apply the reasonable certainty test. Judge Weiss did. Now, that has the effect that it has, whatever that effect is. If the court rules that the matter should go back to the law division to revisit this issue again, the court will so rule. But when I was asked earlier whether there had been anything in the law division that addressed this issue, I wanted to complete the record on that. And so for that purpose, I've read from PA 238.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Your Honors.
Thank you. Thank you to all counsel. We'll take the matter under advisement.